Well, we now have an actual insurrection in America with the traitors leading the charge from the Supreme Court of the state of Colorado. Yeah, welcome to today's broadcast of Brighton Broadcast News. I'm Mike Adams. It's Wednesday, December 20th, 2023. And the biggest breaking news probably in the world right now is that the Supreme Court of Colorado has declared, completely outside of due process, they have declared that President Trump is guilty of insurrection and that therefore he is disqualified from even appearing on the ballot for the president of the United States in the state of Colorado. So in one decision, the clearly treasonous insurrectionist Supreme Court of the state of Colorado has declared that the voters of Colorado have no right to choose Donald J. Trump to represent them as president. This is extraordinary. And this is the tip of the iceberg of the real insurrection that is taking place in America right now. By the way, also today, I have an amazing interview for you with Dr. Michael Nels. And he's the author of an extraordinary book that we have to talk about here. This book is called The Indoctrinated Brain: How to Successfully Fend Off the Global Attack on Your Mental Freedom. This book is amazing. And the interview with Dr. Nels was also amazing. He's an MD and a PhD. He's an expert in human neurology and brain disorders and mental health and so on. And man, this was just one of the best interviews that I've done in a long time. And what's also amazing, I did three interviews today. That was the first one. That's the one you're going to hear today. I also interviewed Liz Gunn, who is the journalist and attorney who helped blow the whistle for Barry Young, the New Zealand database administrator, who is now facing prison time for telling the truth about how vaccines were killing New Zealanders. That interview, probably I'll play that tomorrow. And then I did a third interview today with another extraordinary man, a Qigong master, an author, someone who's an expert in what's called personal energy prepping. Francesco is his first name. And we're going to play that interview real soon. But I got to say, it was probably the best day of triple interviews that I can remember. And you got to hear this interview with Dr. Nels, who is German. This is coming up here today. And it's quite fitting, by the way, based on today's news, which is, of course, all about this assault on your mental freedom and the psyops that are being run against us by the establishment. Now, let's back up for a second. The Supreme Court decision that says you no longer have the right to even vote for Trump. This was a 4-3 ruling. So the seven justices of the state of Colorado, they were all appointed by Democrat governors. So they're all leftists. Even then, three of them wrote dissenting views. But four of them went along with it. And you can imagine these four are probably, you know, bribed or paid off or threatened or Jeffrey Epstein or whatever. I mean, come on, the court system doesn't, it's not based on anything resembling reason or justice or the rule of law. Not when it comes to barring Trump. They would twist and bend and distort every possible thing to say that you can't vote for Trump. And that's what they're saying now. So this is the actual insurrection in America. This is the insurrection by the establishment who rigged the election in 2020. They stole it from Trump, who was the rightful winner of the 2020 election. They installed Joe Biden, and then they turned the entire state apparatus against Donald Trump to try to criminalize him on anything they could come up with, anything they could drum up. The media has declared him to be an insurrectionist, but he's never been charged with insurrection. Insurrection has never been proven to have occurred. And by the way, the very thing that he did, which was questioning the election, Democrats do it every time they lose. They routinely question the outcomes of elections in which they lose. I mean, Hillary Clinton can't shut up about how she thinks the election was stolen from her by Trump and the Russians. And, you know, Bush Gore, going back to 2000, you'll never hear the end of the hanging chads. I mean, anytime Democrats lose, they claim elections were rigged. But only when Trump says it is it considered an actual criminal act, and it's used to remove him from the ballot. Well, I got to say, this decision by the Colorado Supreme Court is going to backfire in such spectacular fashion that I almost think they're doing it on purpose. It's almost like this is such an amazing marketing campaign in favor of Trump at this point. I mean, and think about it. When you hear this news that the Supreme Court of Colorado, I mean, if you're a Coloradan, is that the right term? If you live in Colorado and you hear this news, oh, you're not allowed to vote for Trump. What's your first inclination? I mean, it's to say, hey, F you, I'm going to vote for Trump and I'm going to write his name on the ballot. And I'm going to, it may even be the people who didn't want to vote for Trump are now saying, well, I'm going to vote for Trump just because you say I can't. You know, that's the American spirit right there. It's like, oh, what you're saying, I can't have a chocolate chip cookie, makes me want to have a chocolate chip cookie and maybe two. I mean, even myself right now, as much as I have issues with Trump on various things that I've covered before, like his crazy support for Israel's bombing campaigns and also, you know, Trump being in bed with Pfizer and so on. At this point, I hear this decision and I'm like, man, I would go vote for Trump just to spite the Colorado Supreme Court and slap those people back into reality. You can't tell us that we can't vote for a man. I mean, this is supposed to be a constitutional republic, or as leftists say, oh, it's a democracy. Well, in a democracy, you're supposed to be able to vote for whoever you want. But they're telling you now you're not allowed to vote for this one man who, by the way, is not a criminal, who has never been convicted of insurrection or uprising or treason or traitorous activities. But you know who you are allowed to vote for in America? Oh, the actual criminals, the Hillary Clintons, the Gavin Newsoms, you know, the corrupt Democrat governors and the Joe Bidens. Oh, you're allowed to vote for them, even though Joe Biden is deeply, deeply involved in a influence peddling, you know, payola racket where he and Hunter, they collected tens of millions of dollars from China and from Ukraine and, you know, gas companies and corporations. It was all pay for play. It was all blatantly illegal. I mean, the Biden crime family is an actual criminal family, but they would never remove them from the ballot. Oh, no, no. Only Trump. And I call this election deplatforming, because it's the same thing as censorship on big tech platforms. I mean, think about it. The Democrats push censorship. It's, in fact, the Biden White House colluding with big tech that has pushed all this censorship, where they're claiming that the public is not even allowed to hear your arguments or your side of the debate on anything, you know, vaccines, climate, money printing, politics, Ukraine, Russia, anything. Your views are not allowed to be heard. You've been deplatformed off of Facebook and Twitter, you know, before it became X, or, you know, Vimeo or YouTube or whatever. You've been deplatformed because the Democrats can't handle a debate. They can't allow people to speak. Just like with elections now, it's clear they can't allow people to vote. And why are they terrified of the people voting? Why? And I think the answer is becoming rather obvious, because at this point, Joe Biden is such a miserable failure and Donald Trump is gaining so rapidly in popularity that there's probably enough support right now in America to outvote the fraud that the Democrats plan to commit. And this is why, out of sheer desperation, they're now trying to remove Trump from the ballot, because they can't even cheat enough anymore to outnumber the uprising of people who are fed up with the Democrats. Now they have to remove Trump from the ballot and make it technically impossible for Trump to be elected. Like, this is an actual insurrection being carried out by the Colorado Supreme Court. And I'm even suspicious about this decision. I'm suspicious about two possible plays that may be at work here. Number one, it's almost like they're trying to provoke a civil war. They want a civil war. You know, they want an uprising. They want a real insurrection, you know. But we should make sure, of course, that we don't fall for that, because it doesn't help any situation to grab a bunch of rifles and, you know, start threatening Supreme Court justices or anything crazy like that. And that's the opposite of what we should do. We should peacefully, but firmly, number one, protest against this decision. And we should strongly support Trump's right to be on the ballot, even if we don't support Trump as individuals. You should support his right to be on the ballot, because that's what democracy or a constitutional republic is supposed to be about. But I almost feel like this is bait, like they're trying to trigger a civil war uprising. And they tried that with January 6th, of course, which we now know was completely contrived. There were over 100 undercover federal agents there running that operation. The FBI was involved. The Capitol Police were involved. And the Secret Service was involved. That was a plot to try to destroy Trump, to steal the election, and then imprison Trump and all of his supporters. That's what that plot was. And it was run by Nancy Pelosi and the Capitol Police and a bunch of crooked senators and, you know, people in high places. We now know that. And the FBI was, of course, deeply involved. It was a total theatrical operation, a staged insurrection. And if you think about it, it failed to set off the civil war that they wanted. So now they're trying again. This is kind of like the same way that NATO keeps trying to provoke Russia. You know, NATO keeps announcing new weapons. Oh, we're going to have F-16s. We're going to have, you know, M-777s. We're going to have artillery. We're going to have this and that. HIMARS, long-range missiles. And what they're really saying is, Russia, please nuke us so that we can play the role of the victims. And then we can declare, Russia launched a nuclear war and the world has to condemn Russia. We must all attack Russia. I mean, that's what this is all about in Ukraine, is trying to provoke Russia into an escalation, because this is how the State Department operates. They're trying to do the same thing domestically. They're trying to provoke Trump supporters to get, you know, hopping mad, which, again, I urge you not to react emotionally to this. If anything, we should react with some laughter at this point. But they're trying to get the American people, the Trump supporters in particular, to be so hopping mad that they get a bunch of Trump supporters to, you know, rise up with guns or something in Colorado. And then they can stage that. I wouldn't be surprised if the FBI is about ready to roll out a bunch of actors, you know, another one of these federal groups running around with Nazi flags and wearing khakis and masks. They always wear masks because, of course, they're all FBI agents, or they're recruited by the FBI. They will never show who they really are because they're all fake. They're all actors. But you can bet they're going to assemble a bunch of actors here to run around the Colorado Supreme Court building with a bunch of Nazi flags so that CNN can be there to film that and say, look, oh my God, there's an actual insurrection now in Colorado. That's what they're planning. And they hope to recruit some gullible people to go along with it, like they did on January 6th. A few people went along and entered the Capitol building. And some people, you know, stole a podium or whatever. Who cares? They hope to get people in Colorado to go along with this insurrection and show up with guns and cause, you know, a firefight or something. And then they can declare martial law. And then they can cancel the 2024 election. And they might even get away with it. This is the plan, folks. This is bait. And I say, don't take the bait. You're being triggered on purpose. They're trying to get you to overreact. But I think what they've actually accomplished here is they've just lit a fire under the Trump support base in Colorado. At this point, if you're a Trump supporter, you are probably more motivated than ever to put Trump signs in your yard, to write in Trump's name on the ballot if you have to monitor the ballot counting, because you know it's Colorado. They're going to try to cheat. The Democrats are going to run the same operation as before. You know, they're going to flood the zone with mail-in ballots, and they're going to have ballot stuffing and, you know, ballot harvesting and ballot mules. They're going to do everything they can to try to keep Joe Biden in office, even though, of course, he shouldn't have been there in the first place. But I think that this is just going to motivate Trump supporters even more than they were motivated already. And so understand, by the way, the fact that the Supreme Court can make a decision like this completely outside of due process, by the way. Trump was never even charged with acts of insurrection or treason. I mean, the entire 14th Amendment, those provisions were authored after the Civil War in America. You know, the 1860s, the Civil War, where there were generals and political leaders of the South that were actively involved in a war to overthrow the North, or I guess you could say they wanted to defend themselves against Northern aggression. It just depends on what point of view you have, I guess. Or I guess if you're Israel, you can bomb the North and claim it's self-defense, something like that. But the 14th Amendment was all about making sure that these Civil War leaders could not be elected president, that so that they would represent both the North and the South. But these were people that were, you know, generals in the Civil War. These weren't people who were just talking about, oh, I think the election was rigged. You know, they cheated in the election. That's not an insurrection to say, I think they cheated. Or to say, hey, everybody come to Washington, D.C. and peacefully march, you know, peacefully protest in public, as is your First Amendment right. That's not an insurrection to say that. Or even to bring a million people there. That's not an insurrection. Even breaking a few windows in the Capitol building is not an insurrection. But the Colorado Supreme Court decided that it is, completely without due process. So they think that they are dictators, these Supreme Court justices in Colorado. They think that they are dictators. And I want to be clear, I'm not advocating any form of, you know, violence or anything crazy against these justices. I think they should be recalled from office, by the way. They're unelected. Nobody elected them there. They were appointed by Democrat governors like Hickenlooper. So they don't represent the people. They represent the interests of the Democrat establishment. Well, they should be removed from office. And so if you're listening to this in Colorado, I think that what you should do here is, number one, start a campaign to support Trump on the ballot and start another campaign to recall these four justices, Marquez, William W. Hood III, Richard Gabriel, and Justice Melissa Hart. Those are the four that, in my opinion, just committed treason in America. They just committed an act of insurrection by interfering with the national election, by effectively depriving Trump of the Electoral College votes of the entire state of Colorado, regardless of whether the people of Colorado want Trump to serve as their president. This is an act of insurrection. This is an act of treason. And these four Supreme Court justices of Colorado, they did it deliberately. They know what they're doing. They know that this is blatantly unconstitutional, but they're doing it anyway because they will always bend the rules to try to harm Trump. Just like they'll bend the rules, you know, in the courtroom, or the rules of district attorneys, the rules of charging for crimes, the rules of real estate evaluations. Oh, Mar-a-Lago is only worth, you know, $2 million. What? Yeah, whatever it takes to try to claim that Trump is a fraud. So yes, in summary, there is an insurrection taking place in the United States of America, and the leaders of that insurrection are named Marquez, Hood, Gabriel, and Hart. And they think that they can be dictators over the entire country. Extraordinary. So here's what's going to happen next. This will be appealed to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court will be pressured heavily by the media and the Democrats. They will pressure all of the Trump-appointed judges to recuse themselves. In other words, to eliminate the conservative majority on the bench. And in this way, then they could get, you know, Sotomayor and others, some of whom are not at all qualified. They're just the virtue-signaling picks to be on the bench. They could get them to disqualify Trump and set this precedent that means that the establishment can effectively deplatform anyone they want from participating in elections. If they don't like anything that you said, they can just say, well, you're barred via the 14th Amendment. Of course, Joe Biden can pretend to be president even as a dementia patient or an Alzheimer's case who barely has any idea who he is on any given day. But someone who loves America, someone who puts America first, like Donald J. Trump, is banned from even running for president. This is the precedent that they are trying to set. So the Trump-appointed justices on the Supreme Court, they must absolutely resist these calls for recusing themselves. Now, remember, Jeff Sessions as Attorney General during the first Trump administration, he recused himself from the special prosecutions or special investigations involving the total hoax that claimed that Trump colluded with Russia to rig the election. So Jeff Sessions recused himself, and then that allowed all of the traitors, the deep state operators inside the DOJ and the FBI, to just steamroll over Sessions and steamroll Trump into these, you know, horrific situations that were all designed to strip him of power and occupy him and make sure that he could not function as president, which they did. That's how they stalled him for 4 years. So that was a huge mistake by Jeff Sessions. No Democrat ever recuses themselves from anything, it seems. And we need to be very vocal, peacefully, but publicly vocal, to demand that the Trump-appointed justices do not recuse themselves. They do not have any ongoing conflict of interest because they cannot be appointed again. They are lifetime members. They're not beholden to Trump at this point. So they can't be appointed a second time. They don't need any favors from Trump. And frankly, the careers of the Supreme Court justices are, you know, well protected, regardless of whether Trump becomes president again for a third term. Yes, third term. That's the correct number because he was already elected twice. But you are going to see a full court press by the mainstream media to try to attack these justices yet again, to try to convince them to recuse themselves. So we're talking about Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. And if you want to know how desperately the deep state and the radical leftists want to control the Supreme Court, never forget they murdered Scalia. They murdered him at a ranch in Texas, by the way. They murdered him because they wanted to control the Supreme Court decisions. Well, when Trump won the election, he was able to appoint three justices, again, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. And of course, the media went absolutely bat bleep crazy trying to destroy these people, especially Kavanaugh. What Kavanaugh was subjected to in terms of the false rumors, the defamation, lying, smears. I mean, it's truly historic in a horrifying negative way. But they're going to turn all that heat back up again to try to silence these three justices and try to get the Supreme Court to declare that Trump cannot run for president. So at this point, for me personally, of course, I'm always reconsidering who's running and what are the reasons they're running for. And I've had issues with Trump. But in my mind, this decision by Colorado puts Trump on my priority list to support. Because, you know, if the establishment hates Trump this much, that they're willing to go to such extreme lengths or depth of bending the law and twisting the Constitution just to get him off the ballot, then that makes me say, well, that's probably a good reason to support him. Because if he's that much of a threat to the corrupt criminal establishment, then we should probably put him in office. It's very clear that the establishment is now absolutely terrified by the idea of Trump resuming control over the Oval Office. And that's probably a good thing. You know, in a nation where the government fears the people and the choices of the people, you have more freedom. In a nation where the people fear the government, you have tyranny. And right now, the Supreme Court of Colorado is terrified of Donald J. Trump, which probably means he's going to do something good for we the people. Now, I'm not naive about this. Don't get me wrong. Trump will also, of course, shell out unlimited trillions to the military, and he will supply more bombs to Israel, and he will hand over tens of billions of dollars in more money to Big Pharma, and he'll probably roll out more vaccines, but he won't force you to take them. He's been very clear about that. He's always said that it's your choice, so no vaccine mandates. But, you know, Trump supports big banks, money printing, debt, the war machine, Big Pharma, all that stuff. And I've been very vocal about that. But if the establishment fears him so much that they have to deny him even the appearance on a ballot, then he must represent some other extraordinary threat to the establishment. that no doubt involves something, you know, something beneficial for the American people, like building a border wall, for example, or let's say restarting domestic energy production so that we are energy independent, for example, getting us out of these climate change, you know, climate cult agreements and accords and all these other treaties and so on, all that nonsense, and also getting us out of wars. Trump is actually very good at that. His geopolitical intuition is much better than almost any Democrat, and Trump will get us out of war with Russia, which even that thought terrifies the Democrats and the State Department and the Pentagon. They don't want peace. They don't want somebody to come in and extricate us from those conflicts. They want somebody who will just keep sacrificing Ukrainian men until there's not a single one left. Oh, by the way, did you hear Zelensky now? He's saying that they're still going to win. They're going to win the war with Russia. All they need now is another 400,000 to 500,000 Ukrainian men. They got to find them somewhere. And they're going to send them to the battlefield and have them slaughtered at the hands of the Russians. I mean, this is the latest insanity from Zelensky. We're going to win. We just need to find another 500,000 men to sacrifice. Well, what men do they have left? You know, half the men fled the country when they had the chance. 12 million fewer Ukrainians are even in the country these days, or something around that number. And then they've killed off or wounded already 500, 600, 700,000 Ukrainian men who are of a younger age, you know, from 19 to, let's say, 45 or something. Well, what are they going to deploy now? Like senior citizens? Like take men with walkers and canes out of the retirement centers and send them to the front lines with suicide vests? What insanity is this? Are we going to have like the geriatric platoon facing off against well-equipped, young, capable Russian soldiers? Is that what this is going to come to? It's completely insane. But this is all being pushed by the U.S. under the Biden regime, under the State Department lunatics like Blinken and Nuland and others. And this whole insanity could be brought to a halt by President Donald J. Trump. And so if you care about Ukraine, by the way, if you care about Ukrainian men and families, you should support Trump, because Trump would stop the carnage and Trump would find a way to reach an agreement, and Russia would be willing to sit down and talk with Trump, whereas they're not willing to talk to the U.S. State Department right now, because the State Department has proven itself to be populated by a bunch of crazed, incompetent, ignorant lunatics who are beyond talking to. So you want to save Ukraine? Vote for Trump. You want to save America? Vote for Trump. And again, I don't agree with everything that Trump stands for. I strongly disagree with some of his things. But now, thanks to Colorado, I want to vote for Trump a third time. All right, changing the topic here today. We've got other big breaking news to talk about. And don't forget, we've got the interview coming up with Dr. Michael Nels, author of The Indoctrinated Brain. And that's an interview you don't want to miss. In fact, I should probably keep this short so we can get to that more quickly. But did you know that pharmacies in the United States, all the major chains, you know, CVS and Walgreens and Kroger, did you know that they will spill your private, so-called private patient medical records with law enforcement, even without warrants? Yeah, this has come out from a congressional review that was actually run by Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat, and a couple of other senators. And did you know that they found out that if law enforcement just asks a pharmacy for records, the pharmacy will comply and just hand over everything? Oh, here's the patient's name and social security number, and here's all the prescription drugs that they have. Yeah, just have all the data, even without a warrant. So according to the report, there were 8 different pharmacy companies that were surveyed, including, like I said, CVS and Walgreens, and none of the 8 require a warrant before sharing patient pharmacy records with law enforcement. None of them. And most of them, including Rite Aid, they don't require any legal review before just handing over your patient records to law enforcement. I thought, you know, privacy protections were supposed to be the law. You know, you're always handed disclaimers and everything. If you're in hospitals or pharmacies, you know, there's all this documentation. So we protect your records. We're HIPAA compliant. We won't share unless these circumstances. It's all BS. All that has to happen is a cop walks in and says, hey, give me all the prescription records for, you know, Jane Doe over here. And they say, okay, how soon do you want that, officer? And they just hand it all over, print it out, or hand them a, you know, a thumb drive. Here you go, all the records you want. No protections whatsoever. Not at Kroger, not at CVS, not at Walgreens. None of them. I mean, so much for HIPAA compliance. It's a complete joke. And by the way, most of these record requests from law enforcement are related to civil lawsuits, not criminal lawsuits, civil lawsuits. I mean, not criminal charges or prosecutions. So what, somebody sues another person, like an ex-wife sues the ex-husband, and then what, the court says, well, we want your prescription records because that's relevant to the divorce or whatever is going on. You know, I want to prove this person was on antidepressants. And so they just call the pharmacy and say, yeah, you know, we're with law enforcement, give us all the records. And apparently, according to officials that work at CVS and Rite Aid and Kroger, they tell their staff members at the pharmacies to just instantly process all these requests without any review whatsoever, and just hand them over immediately. And they do. So do you realize that you have zero privacy if you're taking prescription drugs in America? You have zero privacy. I mean, there's one more reason to avoid taking prescription medication, because your medication records can be used against you by police, by a family member, I don't know, a sibling, a neighbor, somebody that sues you, by a current or former employer or employee. You know, what if you run a small business and you hire people and then they claim that you're crazy and you must be taking antipsychotic medications, and they sue you, and then the court orders the pharmacy to turn over all your medication history? And not only is it antipsychotic meds, and it's also a bunch of, you know, Viagra or who knows, like embarrassing medications for genital warts and anal swelling or whatever. I mean, this is the kind of craziness that can now happen in our world. I don't know if there are drugs for anal swelling, but probably. If there are, I've never seen them. Now, you know, by the way, as a side note, I do have a record of certain prescription medications, even though I don't take them. You know what I do? I stockpile drugs for emergency use. I'm talking about antibiotics. Yeah, I have emergency antibiotics in a refrigerator that were prescribed to me by a physician based on, you know, the need to have backup prescription medications for emergency purposes. So, you know, I have a prescription record out there as well. And it's all antibiotics. It certainly is not, you know, Viagra or antidepressants or antipsychotics or statin drugs or all this other garbage. But for a lot of people, you know, their medication history can be quite revealing and even embarrassing, and maybe even could get them in a lot of trouble in a civil lawsuit, depending on what the meds were. So what you need to understand, and I know you get this, but maybe some people don't yet, is that your pharmacy is not your friend. Your pharmacy is Big Brother. Your pharmacy is spying on you. Just like Google is spying on you, obviously, and your mobile phone is spying on you. Your Apple phone, your iPhone, you know, your Google Android. This is why you need a de-Googled phone, by the way. That's why we've partnered with the Above Phone company, by the way. If you want to check it out, go to abovephone.com/DTV. That's the name of our show, Decentralized TV. That's an affiliate link. But you got to have a de-Googled phone, or your phone's spying on you all the time. Your bank is spying on you. Another reason to use privacy crypto, such as Monero or Beam or Firo or even Epic Cash. We just posted an interview about Epic Cash. Actually, let me see if that went live today. Yeah, sure enough, here it is. Just posted Epic Cash project lead reveals huge advantages for the Mimblewimble blockchain. And Epic Cash is built on Mimblewimble. So if you're looking at privacy crypto, those are the four biggest ones that I know. Again, Monero, Beam, Firo, which is F-I-R-O, and Epic Cash. And I think we've interviewed all four of those projects. We've also interviewed the guys from Zano. So that's up on decentralized.tv, and you can check out all the episodes there. Now, 26 episodes posted on decentralized.tv. Now, by the way, I don't mean to get off target here, but I just wanted to give you examples of all the ways you're being spied on, which now includes, of course, all your medications. So this is another great reason to use healing foods as your medicine wherever you can, or to grow your own medicine. You know, you can grow your own anti-cancer molecules, one of them known as sulforaphane, by simply sprouting broccoli sprouts. And the great news is it's all off-grid. There's no record of it. Nobody can use it against you. I mean, and no government knows that you're sprouting broccoli seeds. You can grow your own medicine, and you can do so with complete privacy. But anytime you use the establishment system, whether it's the mainstream banks or the mainstream pharmacies or mainstream search engines or mainstream email or anything like that, if you use the mainstream system, you are being spied on. And they will use this information against you. They will turn it over to law enforcement, which can use it to prosecute you. By the way, have you taken a spit test and sent your saliva to those genetic testing companies, you know, the Ancestry, what's it called, 23andme.com? Yeah, 23andme, a biotech company that routinely turns over genetic testing to law enforcement. And people are being prosecuted because there's a match. Oh, there's a match. What, you mean a PCR test, a fraudulent PCR test? Yep, there was a match. We think that you're the criminal. You must have carried out the murder because we found a gene sequence at the scene of the crime and it matched your gene sequence in the database at 23andMe, and they turned it over to the cops without your knowledge. So now you're charged with murder and you weren't even there. It might have happened in a completely different state. The murder happened in, you know, Sacramento, and you live in Boston. And I've never even been to Sacramento. Well, they'll say, well, your genetic code puts you there, according to 23andMe. Therefore, you're guilty. You're like, I've never even traveled there. I don't have plane tickets there. My cell phone didn't even log the location in that city. Well, you know, your genetic fingerprint is totally unique. You're not anti-science, are you? The science says you're guilty. So understand, look, if you interact with any of these companies in any way, with your genetic code, with your emails, with your phone, you know, your prescriptions, all these things, your financial transactions, it's all being weaponized against you to be exploited and leveraged to destroy your life. And if that's not bad enough, by the way, the company 23andMe was also recently hacked. And I forgot the exact number, but it seems like there were, 9 million client records that were stolen by the hackers. So I don't know all of what information the hackers got, but it could have included your genetic code and your name and maybe your address, probably a social security number. I don't know, credit card. Who knows? Can you imagine the chaos that could be carried out against you with all that information, including your genetic code? 23andMe was hacked. Oh, here's a story. I found it. 6.9 million users had their information stolen from 23andMe. They announced that hackers had accessed the personal data of their customers. Let's see. Hackers were able to access a significant number of files containing profile information about users' ancestry. Well, that seems to indicate that they got your genetic information. Yeah, 6.9 million customers were affected, according to 23andMe. They admitted it. Wow. They got your DNA. See how silly it is to to spit your genetic code into a little vial and send it off to 23andMe just so they can tell you, you know, you're 0.7% African. And I mean, all our ancestors are African. I've already covered that before. All of humanity can be traced back to Africa, because at one time there were only a few thousand individuals of modern humans alive on Earth, and they were all African, by the way, folks. We all had black skin if you go back far enough. Just saying. But do you recall those stories where some people would have like their iguana spit into the vial? They would collect iguana saliva somehow. That must be difficult. And they would send that off to 23andMe, or they would collect dog saliva. That's pretty easy to get. Just hold up a piece of dog food and it's like saliva for eternity. Just hold a glass under the muzzle and you just get lots of saliva. They send that off to 23andMe and they get back these detailed reports of the so-called ancestry of the lizard or the dog or the rabbit or the other creatures. And you would think, by the way, you would think that 23andMe, if they're supposed to be able to read all your detailed genetics, that they would at first recognize that this isn't human. But no, they don't. You send them iguana spit and they're like, oh, you're 2.7%, you know, Italian or whatever. Or I'm not trying to say Italians are dogs. Don't misinterpret. I'm just random examples. They're trying to tell you you're still human. You have all this ancestry, but it was actually a dog sample. So what's the reliability of this whole thing, by the way? So I'm never sending anything to 23andMe. But then you have all these reductionist lunatics. They're like, but if you get your genetic information, it can tell you at what risk you have of certain genetic diseases like cancer. And I found out that I had a 14.7% chance of cancer in the next decade. I'm like, well, why are you eating processed meat and hot dogs, you lunatic? I mean, what difference does the genetic information make? You just shouldn't eat cancer-causing chemicals anyway, no matter what your ancestry. This is what I don't get about these people. They're like, it shows me I have a much higher risk of obesity, and then they eat Pop-Tarts and donuts all day. It's like, so the information didn't alter your behavior, so why are you bothering with the tests? If you're going to pursue a pro-diabetes lifestyle, who cares what your ancestry is? You're committing food suicide, you know? Come on. And besides, I don't believe their tests anyway. You could probably send in like ground up monkey testicles and it would come back and say, oh, you're like 90% Canadian or something. Who knows? That's not a slight toward the Canadian people, but rather to Mr. Castro, the prime minister, Justin Castro, Mr. Monkey Testicles. I want to get a saliva sample from Mitt Romney and send it in with the question, is this human at all? Please tell me. They'll probably come back, you know, 52% lizard people from another planet or something. Okay, that's a joke, folks. We're just having a little fun with this concept. That's a joke. Lizard people would never submit to genetic testing, obviously. All right, let's change the subject here before this gets a little too off the wall. The situation in the Red Sea is far worse than what you've been told. And yes, we're talking about the country of Yemen and the Houthi rebels that are attacking the maritime vessels, the cargo transport ships, for the most part, that are moving through the Red Sea on their way to the Suez Canal in Egypt in order to either go to the Mediterranean Sea or to come from the Mediterranean Sea. In any case, the U.S. Navy has sent this huge mass of naval vessels to the area to try to keep the shipping lanes open, you know, for commerce reasons, to protect the corporate interests and so on, and strategic interests of the United States. And it's not working, because now six major shipping companies in the world have said they will no longer transport vessels through the Red Sea. That now includes Evergreen. And it already included Maersk and COSCO and the other top leaders. So the Houthi rebels here, who are angry about the situation in Israel, have effectively put a stranglehold on world trade. And this is going to cause supply chain chaos all around the world. Now, I've recorded a special report on this topic. It's about 15 minutes or so that goes into a lot more detail. I'm going to play that here. And then after that special report, we'll jump into today's interview with Dr. Michael Nels. And again, that interview, you do not want to miss it. In fact, even if you don't want to hear this special report, you should jump ahead to the interview, or we'll also post the interview separately. The interview is about the book, The Indoctrinated Brain. And it is, again, one of the best conversations that I've had with anybody, especially on a day that I did three amazing interviews back to back with just extraordinary people. We are living in extraordinary times. Let's be, you know, honest about that. The things that are happening right now are unprecedented at so many levels, including what the Colorado Supreme Court just did. But anyway, give a listen to the special report. You'll have a much better understanding about what's happening in the Red Sea. And then enjoy my interview with Dr. Michael Nels on the other side of that. Take care. You are now witnessing the collapse of globalization and the collapse of the ability of the United States Navy to ensure the safety of sea lanes where all the world's goods and energy products are transported. This is happening right now in the Red Sea, where now I think six of the world's top shipping container companies have said they will no longer transport any vessels through the Red Sea because of the attacks from the Houthis in Yemen, who are attacking these ships in response to Israel's war on Gaza. And the Houthis say that they will not stop these attacks until Israel stops its bombardment of Gaza, an act that many observers and many nations around the world have condemned as acts of genocide, ethnic cleansing, or war crimes. And whether or not you agree with that description of what Israel is doing, the Houthis absolutely do agree with that. And they have drones and they have rockets. And it turns out that when ships go through the Red Sea on their way to or from the Suez Canal in Egypt, they have to sail right by Yemen. And this puts them within range of relatively low-cost, simple, short-range devices, such as rockets and drones, that can attack these ships. And that's exactly what is happening right now. And this is also an example of asymmetric warfare. So by expending just a few tens of thousands of dollars on these drones and rockets, the Houthis can halt the transport of hundreds of billions of dollars in cargo, and they can induce long delays by forcing these ships to sail around the southern tip of the African continent instead of using the Suez Canal. This will, of course, strongly disrupt global supply chains, and it will lead to shortages of energy products as well as consumer products and raw materials in Europe and other regions around the world. So we're talking about a very small expenditure on drones and rockets having a huge effect on global trade and leading to massive losses among corporations that have come to depend on the governments of the world, specifically the United States Navy, to keep these sea lanes open and operating. But I've spoken about this in the past. I've said that as the United States Navy loses its ability to project power and fear over the rest of the world, that these sea lanes will be subject to attack and the U.S. will be unable to protect them, which means that we will see a loss in globalization, that is, global supply chains based on a very affordable, very efficient transportation via shipping containers. You know, many of these cargo vessels can hold tens of thousands or even over 100,000 shipping containers. And that makes international shipping very inexpensive. But those days are about to go bye-bye. So what you're going to see now is more countries saying that we aren't afraid of the U.S. Navy. Because, after all, the U.S. can't really project much power on the ground. And that was proven with the withdrawal from Afghanistan under Biden, which was an embarrassing but pivotal moment for the Pentagon and the U.S. military, especially in the eyes of other countries around the world, realizing that, hey, you know, the United States isn't really as powerful as it once was. This is not a military to be feared. Now, there's no question the U.S. Navy is still the strongest and most dominant navy in the world, but even all the naval ships in the world can't crawl across the land. So they're limited to the waters, obviously. And this is why Yemen is not afraid of the U.S. Navy. In addition, the U.S. Navy, yes, they can fire cruise missiles and they can launch fighter jets and bombers and so on, and they can do a lot of kinetic damage from some distance. But if that kind of exchange begins, the U.S. Navy is also a bunch of sitting ducks out there. Because how hard is it to hit an aircraft carrier? You can overwhelm the carrier's defenses with rockets. You can not only hit container ships with rockets and drones, you can hit naval vessels. And this is exactly where this is going if it continues to escalate. And you've probably noticed this huge collection of U.S. naval vessels and multiple aircraft carriers and carrier strike groups that are gathering in the Middle East right now, some in the Mediterranean, some in the Red Sea, some actually in the Persian Gulf at this moment, some moving through the Strait of Hormuz right beside Iran. And this is crazy. I've never seen so many U.S. naval ships in the region. And what it means is that there's nothing available for the U.S. Navy to protect Taiwan, for example, or to, you know, monitor the South Pacific. The U.S. is stretched too thin. And China is no doubt noticing this. Russia is noticing this. And if the U.S. Navy can't even protect cargo ships in the Red Sea, then a lot of countries are asking the question, you know, what good is the U.S. military in terms of protecting trade routes, and what good is the U.S. dollar? And this is why Russia and China are now no longer using the dollar at all in trades between themselves. It's just rubles and yuan, and that's it. And also, BRICS nations are being encouraged to completely drop the dollar, and you can bet that those plans are underway. And these things are related. The strength of the dollar currency is, in essence, directly proportional to the strength of the U.S. Navy and the U.S. military's ability to project power around the world. So as that power is waning, as we've seen, even with the defeat of the United States by Russia in Ukraine and the defeat in Afghanistan and other places as well, then we're going to see the dollar currency collapse at the same time. Now, there are so many sub-issues to talk about here. One is, of course, that the supply chain of products that you rely on, spare parts for vehicles and air conditioners and components for everything, those are going to be much more difficult to get. And you're going to have a problem sourcing things kind of like what we experienced during COVID. Longer waits, higher prices, more scarcity. This is going to affect the U.S. economy as well as the corporations and manufacturers that also rely on these components can no longer get them in a reliable manner. Sure, they will eventually show up. It's just going to take a lot longer. So that's one issue. Get ready for supply chain chaos. The second issue is to understand that the reason these ships are no longer being allowed to traverse the Red Sea is because the insurance companies have dropped insurance coverage for that region. So these large shipping companies such as Maersk or Evergreen or Costco, of course, they have to have insurance for their ships and their cargo in case of catastrophic events. Well, if they can't sail with insurance, then they can't sail at all. So the insurance companies are telling them, we will no longer insure your ships and your loads because of instability in this region and the attacks from the Houthis and, you know, the possibility of Iran getting involved and the U.S. Navy starting a shooting war and so on. So basically, the whole region, including the Red Sea, is being turned into a war zone. And these insurance companies are saying, we won't insure your ships sailing through a war zone. But now, think about where this goes. We know there's a lot of tension right now between China and Taiwan. And we know that China has set its sights on countries like even the Philippines, for example. And that China has laid claim to a lot of the waters in that region in a disputed fashion. You know, China has seized or even built up artificial islands, and then they've used those to claim that the seas around those islands belong to China. You know, the South China Sea, you know, the Straits of Taiwan and so on. These are all disputed areas now. Well, if the U.S. can't project naval power to maintain dominant control over those waters, then what does this mean for exports of consumer goods from countries like South Korea, Vietnam, Taiwan in particular, but also, if you think about it, Japan, the Philippines, Australia, the whole region there could be thrown into chaos with disruptions caused by essentially the same thing we're seeing in the Red Sea area right now. What if China decides to start attacking U.S. naval vessels using shore-based missile batteries? You know, what if we actually get into a conflict with China there? Well, that would mean then there would be no insurability of the shipping containers out of any of those countries. And imagine exports halted from China, or imagine exports halted from Korea or Vietnam or the countries I mentioned, or even Indonesia. You're talking about a complete cutoff of prescription pharmaceuticals, computer components, telecommunications components. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about consumer goods and plastics and resins and polymers and chemicals, and essentially the entire global supply chain as we know it would be shattered. And that scenario is not fiction. That scenario, you're actually seeing it unfold right now in the Red Sea on kind of a smaller scale. Now, the U.S. can survive without exports out of the Middle East, although it would certainly disrupt a lot of industries. But the U.S. cannot survive without exports out of China and Asian countries. So that is absolutely essential for the survival of the U.S. economy and the continued functioning of the U.S. economy. So understand what we're talking about here. The U.S. does not manufacture as much as it used to, not by a long shot, especially compared to post-World War II. And U.S. steel was just sold to a Japanese steel giant, Nippon Steel, for $14.9 billion. So that means the United States no longer has much of a steel infrastructure under its own control domestically. U.S. steel was the second largest steel manufacturer in the United States. And that steel, of course, is used in not only commercial construction and rebar and so on, but also steel is used very heavily in military weapons, such as tanks and artillery, guns. I'm not talking about firearms. I mean, big guns of war, as well as naval vessels and infantry fighting vehicles, transportation, and so on. So without control over that steel, and without having imports from Asia, the United States of America is essentially under siege, under an economic siege where it cannot function. It cannot build anything, and its economy cannot function at all. So what we're actually seeing demonstrated in the Red Sea by the Houthis is no doubt getting the attention of the Communist Chinese Party right now, which is probably figuring out, hey, the easiest way to crush the United States and defeat the country is just launch an economic blockade that bans exports out of Asian countries, or certainly out of Taiwan for starters. And that's it. The United States collapses. And this is the result of too many corporations in America offshoring all their manufacturing to China and other countries. And the United States will be left with just exports out of Mexico. And of course, Canada, I suppose. But Mexico generates a lot more exports for the U.S. compared to Canada, although there is considerable trade with Canada, but it's nothing compared to our trade with Asia. So that's the scenario. Again, the big macroeconomic picture that is emerging here is that, number one, the sea lanes, the shipping lanes are not safe, that the ability of the United States military to protect those sea lanes is rapidly collapsing. And one of my concerns is that there's going to be an incident in the Middle East where a U.S. naval vessel is attacked and either severely damaged or even destroyed, and that's going to set a precedent. That's going to show that the U.S. Navy is outdated, that it is incompetent in the way it functions, which it is, because it's all woke. They just put the woke commanders at the highest ranks, and they have no idea what they're doing. And you know, we've seen naval vessels colliding with each other in years past because they don't even know how to pilot these ships. They just drive them around until they crash into something. I mean, it's there are good people in the Navy. They're just not put into the positions of control. You know, they're just taking the wokiest wokester and saying, oh, you're an admiral now. Yeah, go drive that ship. Drive it into the reef or something. That's kind of the thing that we're seeing. And perhaps that's an exaggeration, but I'm trying to make a point. The U.S. Navy is not the Navy it used to be. Aircraft carriers are sitting ducks. And advancements in missiles and rockets and drones, including underwater drones, have now allowed smaller countries such as Yemen to be able to disrupt world trade while spending very little money and even threatening the United States Navy. So that's the situation we're facing right now. And it turns out that all of these decades of coercion and pointing guns at people, you know, the U.S. empire running around the world, assassinating leaders and threatening everybody or bribing or blackmailing everybody to say, you have to trade in dollars and you have to trade with us and you have to do what we say, that era is coming to an end. And as it does, world trade will no longer be the same. The globalization of the supply routes is about to collapse. And that means things at home are about to get a lot more expensive and a lot more scarce. So get ready to pay 10 times more for many products that can no longer be imported soon as this situation escalates. And by the way, you'll be buying those products with dollars that are worth less and less every day because of all the money printing. So it's the worst from both angles. You have inflation because your dollars are worth less, and then you have core price increases because you can't get cheap, efficient, affordable exports out of these countries because the Navy can't protect the supply chains. So that's something to look forward to, huh? Well, this is what happens when you rig elections and you put a bunch of lunatics in charge of the White House and the State Department and the Pentagon. This is what happens. Stolen elections have consequences. That's why I say get out there and get your goods now while you still can. You know, get your ammunition. It's about to go up in price massively. Or if you don't know what to do with funds, consider gold and silver. You know, check out goldbacks. I've got a website where I did all the testing on goldbacks and I confirmed how much gold they actually contain, which is over 100% of what they claim. You can see all the test results and you can check prices and everything at verifiedgoldbacks.com. That's an affiliate site. We earn a small percentage there that helps support our platform. But if you're not familiar with goldbacks, man, check it out. These are really amazing. Verifiedgoldbacks.com. And the other thing you might consider is buying diesel. Get yourself a diesel tank, load up on diesel, because I think that oil and all of its byproducts is about to become a lot more expensive in 2024 and beyond. Thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com and Brighteon.com. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we have a very special guest, a first-time guest, an author of a fascinating new book that you'll want to check out. It's called The Indoctrinated Brain. His name is Michael Nels, MD and PhD, so I should be referring to him as Dr. Nels. He joins us from Germany. He's the author of this fantastic book, and he has a lot to tell us about the attacks on our mental health that are being pushed by the establishment, governments, as well as media and other institutions, education in particular, that's actually causing us to be less and less sane. That's not a good thing. Mass mental illness is running amok across the world. So welcome, Dr. Nels. It's an honor to have you on today, sir. Thank you for joining me.
Hello, Mike. I'm very pleased that you invited me. Thank you very much.
I'm thrilled to have you on because right now at this moment in human history, I feel like mental health has never been under such an extreme attack. In fact, I think that in our childhood, we never could have imagined this scale of attack on our mental health where they're telling us that men can have babies and up is down and left is right and all these things. You agree with that characterization?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was seeing the attack on the human brain indirectly by the health policy in the last decades. But what we have observed in 2020 and even further, even worse actually, with the mRNA injection program in 2021 when it started, it became totally clear this is a real major attack on the human mental immune system.
Well, that's a really interesting phrase. Yeah, the human mental immune system, is that the ability to have discernment and to reject crazy ideas or to reject manipulation of our thoughts and moods?
Yeah, actually to think at all. I mean, the mental immune system consists of human curiosity. It consists of the ability to think, the ability to have memories, an autobiographical memory, which gives us information from future, from past events, which we can use to calculate future action. And the sum of that is our mental immune system. I mean, that we react according or the, in the best way possible in a situation. You see, I come from two different directions from my background. I did my PhD work in molecular genetics with a focus on immunology. But then I started to work for about 15 years on the autobiographical memory center in our brain. And if you look from the outside, you know, the evolutionary imperative is be fruitful and multiply, you know. You see it also in another book, it's written down there. But it's also the evolutionary imperative. And if to survive, you to multiply, you have to survive first. And to survive, you have to have an immune system. And most people only think about our physical immune system consisting of the immune cells. But this immune system is only against pathogenic microorganisms. What I'm talking about is pathogenic macroorganisms, and usually they come on two legs. And for the the immune system against the macroorganisms, we usually react with thinking, with planning, with the help of our community. And so I call this the mental immune system. And if you want to localize the mental immune system, it's right in our autobiographical memory center.
That is really fascinating, because our perception of the world around us depends on our memory of who we are and how we got here. And in essence, I think we tend to, of course, project onto the world ideas that are consistent with our own memories. But isn't it astonishing? I mean, we've seen this with even, let's say, police lineups, where there's a so-called eyewitness to a crime scene, and the eyewitness is given, you know, which one of these seven people committed the crime. And we've learned that even our own memories can be very strongly manipulated, if not wholesale, you know, mind wiped, if I could use that term, to where people can be given false memories or real memories can be deleted. And I call these either positive or negative hallucinations. I don't know what term you use, but I say, you know, negative hallucinations are when you are deleting things in the world around you, and positive hallucinations are when you are mentally adding things to the world around you. But the establishment is, they become experts in making us hallucinate in both of those ways.
Yeah, actually, that's what's happening. And it happens in a very, very, I would say, intelligent way. So knowing how the autobiographical memory center works and how it is actually able to create what I call the mental immune system, the attack is right there, based on the measurements that we have to endure in 2020. They all essentially caused a breakdown of the mental immune system. And now it becomes essentially a permanent problem with the mRNA injections, because they really cause the autobiographical memory center to lose its function. And the long-term essentially consequence of that is that the narratives become in a new part of your, essentially overcome your person or your individuality. It's essentially erased, and the narratives become your new personality.
Wow. I mean, you're talking about people being what I call PLFs, or programmable life forms. You're saying they're given a script, new programming that overwrites their own sense of self-identity. And then
that's exactly what I'm describing in my book. Yeah.
Wow. So at that point, then, these individuals just begin to what? Regurgitate the narratives that they're programmed with, yeah. And they lose all self-identity?
Yeah, that's the long-term, essentially, a consequence of the process that I'm describing. And you already realize that when people are essentially already indoctrinated by certain narratives, I've seen it in my family. You see it probably everywhere. You cannot talk about the content of these narratives anymore in a scientific way. You cannot argue against or for anything. You, essentially, the discussion itself becomes a problem because it's almost like you step onto one's toes.
Yes.
when you just start discussing anything. I've seen that in my family, and I couldn't explain it first. But with the discovery I've made, and which I published now in my book, it becomes really clear. These narratives become part of their new personality, and nobody wants their personality to be put into question.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And of course, I think there's a well-known psychological phenomenon where people tend to act in a way that is consistent with their previous statements or their previous positions, right? So no one wants to admit they were wrong. So even if their current position becomes increasingly revealed as absurd, they will stick with it and they will justify it because it's consistent with things they've said before. And I think climate change is probably one of the best examples of this. Talk to us about the climate. Well, I call it a climate cult, but many people who are pushing the climate change agenda, they are utterly immune to any reason or logic when discussing things like photosynthesis or the role of carbon dioxide in plant biology, for example. They block it off, like psychologically, they can't even let that thought into their brain. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, all the wars we are fighting at the moment, I mean, it was first foremost the war against a pandemic virus, and then it was a war against climate change, then you have wars over borders, always with the potential to be world wars. All these wars have narratives, and with the decline of the mental immune system, which I'm describing, people are essentially in a situation where they have no choice but essentially install these narratives into their brain because that's what they're hearing in the main news all the time. That's what they're used to learn and what enters their brain because the autobiographical memory center regards information as necessary to be stored when they come with emotions. And all these wars have a language that is rich of with emotions, with fear and everything. So people are forced to memorize these things despite the fact that their autobiographical memory center is not functioning anymore.
Wow.
As a consequence, it comes to an overriding of their personality.
Now, I'd like to ask you, well, first of all, let me remind our audience about your book. It's called The Indoctrinated Brain. It's available. It's on Audible and Amazon, and it's available in multiple languages as well. It's on other booksellers. The Indoctrinated Brain, How to Successfully Fend Off the Global Attack on Your Mental Freedom by Dr. Michael Nels, who is our guest today. And also, let me mention Michael's website. It's Michael-Nels, NEHLS.com. If you want to find out more information about his website. But let me ask you, Dr. Nels, then it seems like the role of the media is to reinforce the programming rather than to inform people, to manipulate people, and to make sure that their mental immune system, as you describe it, never is allowed a chance to take a breath and operate and rethink things. It's like this constant bombardment of narratives. It overwhelms the system.
Absolutely. You have to understand the major target of the autobiographical memory center is the production of new nerve cells. You have to imagine that we can grow, we can become very old, essentially 100, 120 years old. The oldest woman ever who was ever alive was 122 years old without having Alzheimer's, by the way. So you can memorize things over 100 of years. But the autobiographical memory center is a very small part of your brain. So in order to grow your wealth of experience, it actually has to grow itself. And it does. It produces new nerve cells on a daily basis. And these new nerve cells are essentially the neuronal correlate of curiosity and of our ability to think, and also of our ability to memorize new things without erasing previous memories. So that's a requirement that we can that our autobiography and memory can actually grow over a whole lifetime.
Yes.
But what we have seen in 2020, in particular with the mRNA, which is neurotoxic, the production of these nerve cells is essentially undermined, completely blocked. So if new memories now have to be stored and they come with fear, with narratives, then they have to override the previous memories, memories maybe from your childhood, memories from things you have learned in the past, even thoughts you might have had years or days before. So, but in order to really override everything in the long term, you have to change essentially the story on a daily basis, because the memory center actually has the shape of a seahorse. That's why it's called hippocampus. And so I want to refer to it as the hippocampus. The hippocampus learns only new things if they come, only things if they are new and come with emotion. So changing essentially the story, even what we have experienced in 2020, which really gave me strange feelings at the time. You have to imagine, we know that everything was very well planned ahead.
Yes.
There are lots of documents which show everything was extremely well planned ahead. I mean, they even had the injection program ready for billions of people in a year, which is actually unbelievable from a scientific point of view.
Well, I mean, it's amazing how fast you can move when you skip all clinical trials, of course. I mean,
sure, but still you still have to produce the stuff, you know?
Yes.
So anyway, but this was all very well planned ahead. But then in 2020, when you listen to the politicians, either in the United States or in Germany, on a daily basis, the story was changed. You know, the rules were changed on a daily basis. And so it was almost like they didn't know what they were doing. But from a viewpoint of the hippocampus, it's actually the best way to indoctrinate people is to change the story every day.
Wow.
So that you force the hippocampus to learn the narratives in all variants. And the more the hippocampus learns in a situation where the new neurons are not produced either by the measurements or by the neurotoxin, which is the spike protein, then, of course, you override essentially all previous memories in the long run.
So wait a second, Dr. Nels, what you are describing here, I mean, this is astonishing. I need to step back and try to grasp this myself and share it with the audience. You're talking about a level of neurohacking that is very sophisticated.
Absolutely.
It's not just random, oh, here's a narrative, believe it. But rather, you're just talking about a mechanism where the hippocampus is forced to process changing narratives, some of which may be contradictory, as a way to sort of force the mind wipe of the autobiographical self, as you call it, or the memories that a person already has. I mean, this is almost like science fiction, what you're describing.
Yeah, it sounds like, but you have to imagine there's a great reset going on. All the documents we can see, even in the government, points to the year 2030, where we have to live in smart cities ruled by artificial intelligence, and this is all so far away from what humans really like to live, you know, and it is so far from human that this new operating system under which society has to live, I actually call it the social operating system, SOS, like Save Our Souls, and this new operating system can only be installed if, like with a computer, when you install a new operating system, you have to erase the previous one, so there's no contradictory rules in the program.
Wow.
And that's exactly what's happening. You erase essentially the memories of the people step by step, and it doesn't matter if the narratives are contradictory. The only result has to be that the human individual can only remember fearful narratives which always come with global problems that only a global government can essentially solve. And that's exactly what the reset is going to achieve, is that we accept a global government that rules us with in a way that no normal human would actually accept.
Okay, this is horrifying and fascinating. Let me ask you this technical question then about the hijacking of human neurology. How does this PSYOP, I'll call it, achieve selective memory deletion? For example, in the early days of COVID, we were told 2 weeks to flatten the curve, that if we were just going, if we would lock down for 2 weeks, everything would be fine. And then, of course, it became, you know, more than 2 weeks, and then it became masks, and then the first jab came out, and we were told this jab is 95% effective. And if everybody takes it, or even if some people take it, this thing is going to be done with. It's going to be over. And a lot of people lined up to take it. But then as things progress, it's like, well, that jab didn't work. Here's a new one. This one will work. And then, well, that one's not effective. You need this booster and that booster and this booster. And you're like, what about 2 weeks to flatten the curve? Oh, we don't talk about that anymore. You know, how is this selective memory deletion accomplished that allows them to boil people like frogs, where they're always turning up the heat? They're moving you in a direction gradually, but they're making you forget the initial promises that turned out to be complete fraud.
Yeah, this example is actually in the book with the frog. With the frog.
Oh,
but the point
great.
Is, it's a two-step process, essentially. The first step is you have to block the production of the new nerve cells in the hippocampus. The process actually scientifically is called adult, because it's the only region in the brain that can produce new nerve cells, even if we are grown up. Everything else stops. New production of nerve cells stops when we are about 25 years old. But the hippocampus, based on the fact that we have to grow our wealth of experience over our whole lifetime, has to produce new nerve cells. So it happens in the adult, and it happens in the hippocampus. And the process itself is called neurogenesis, as a neuron, and genesis means, yeah, birth of neurons. So we have the adult hippocampal neurogenesis. And the first step in this process of indoctrination means you have to stop this production. You have to undermine or block the production of these new nerve cells. And just to give you one example out of the book, how this can be accomplished. So in 2002 and 2003, SARS-CoV-1 tried to make a pandemic. It's the predecessor of SARS-CoV-2, which we experienced at the end of 2019, and mainly in 2020. So this virus was shown in papers in 2006 and 2007 that the spike protein creates a neuroinflammatory process in the brain, and thereby releasing cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines like interleukin-1 and interleukin-6 and others. And just to give you an example, if you inject interleukin-1 into a mouse, the production of nerve cells in the hippocampus is completely shut down.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So we knew already that the spike protein can do that. Now, if you really want to make sure that enough spike protein goes into the brain, you have to modify it. Normal spike protein doesn't really go into the brain very well. But with the furin cleavage site, which was introduced, you get the S1 subunit. And the S1 subunit is perfectly adapted to cross the blood-brain barrier and enter the matter of the brain. And there it was shown that it activates the immune cells which preside in the brain. So
this is a cytokine storm attack on neurology.
Exactly. You have a neuroinflammation, and the neuroinflammation leads to a blockade of the production of these new nerve cells. These new nerve cells but have certain functions. First of all, the main function is curiosity. The second function is the ability to think. And the third function is that they are the neuronal correlate of our psychological resilience. That means when you block the production, you can steer people with fear. You can actually make everything with them, because the fear is very strong. The consequence clinically is the high depression rates. So if you lower the production of these nerve cells, psychological resilience goes down. And if psychological resilience goes down, then you are prone to depression. Actually, every antidepressant in the world has only one function: activate the adult hippocampal neurogenesis. Meaning, if you block it with the S1 subunit, the depression rates are explained.
Okay, Dr. Nels, this is astonishing. I now, in retrospect, I wish we would have spoken with you, you know, a year or two ago, but I guess your book just came out. So the timing is good. And I'm so glad you're saying this today, because myself and many others have observed personality changes in people who took these jabs. I mean, strong personality changes where the way I used to describe it, and I've covered this many times in my podcast, is that yes, they lost the higher functions that tend to make us more human, that they reverted to more animalistic, or, you know, the reptilian brainstem type of functions, which is ruled by fear, attracted to violence and lust. Also, for some reason, attracted to a lot more money and power, you know, just very animalistic types of things, but they've lost higher discernment and reasoning. And I even jokingly said before that the number one way to get people to take the second vaccine is to have them take the first vaccine, because at that point they can no longer reason that they shouldn't take the second vaccine. I mean, I've said that before, but you're explaining the mechanism now.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, there was a Nobel Prize in 2002 given to Daniel Kahneman and Bernard Smith in economics, and it was actually a work on psychology, and he showed that in the ability to think rationally or laterally requires mental energy, and I have shown that this mental energy lies in the production of these new nerve cells. So in order to suppress essentially our resentments or our behavior that is not socially accepted, we need this energy. And if this energy is lost because you have no production of these nerve cells, then people actually behave more reptile-like, if you want.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's
totally sense.
We've seen this even in people reacting to new information. People who took the vaccines, I've noticed, will tend to become very angry more easily when presented with new information about, here's new data showing harms of the vaccines, or here's new data showing, you know, the inflammation response caused by this and so on. And I've seen many people react in a very strong, emotionally charged, negative way that is inconsistent with their personality before the jabs. So there are personality changes. I mean, we're talking about real hacking, reprogramming the neurology of human beings.
Yeah, and the clinical consequence that we can observe is the increased depression rates and the accelerated development of Alzheimer's disease.
Wow.
So, for example, in Germany, in 2021, there was a survey of the German Alzheimer's Society. And compared to 2018, when the last survey was done, we have an increase of new cases of Alzheimer's in Germany by 31%.
Unbelievable.
And I have published a paper in 2016 called The Unified Theory of Alzheimer's Disease. And in this paper, I show that Alzheimer's is caused by a lack of production of new nerve cells in the hippocampus.
Wow. Oh, I want to read that paper. Can you send that to our producers?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a peer-reviewed publication, pretty big, because I show that the process can also be reversed.
See, that's critical. Right. And okay, so you're talking about neurogenesis as one of the keys to reversing Alzheimer's. I guess.
Yeah, in the early stage. And that was shown now. If in the early stage of Alzheimer's, when the disease is mainly focused on the hippocampus, I also call it hippocampal dementia, because compared to vascular dementia, which comes from a stroke and other problems, atherosclerosis and so forth. But the hippocampal dementia or Alzheimer's disease in the very early stages can be reversed, because there is this potential of reactivating the neurogenesis process.
And does this mean that Joe Biden might have a chance in 2024? could we help that man?
Yeah, show him my paper.
Yeah, let's get him to...
It's actually in there how it has to be done, and it was shown that it works.
Well, let me ask you then a question related to that, and then I want to get to solutions, because I know our audience wants to know how they protect themselves from all of this neuro hijacking, and I know your book covers that, but let me ask you a personal question. I have this on my desk, this Rubik's Cube, because, let me back up. I'm in my mid-50s, and I've been practicing really outstanding nutrition for 2 decades. including many nutrients such as lion's mane, nutrients that are associated with neurogenesis, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, my brain works so much better today in my mid-50s than it ever did in my 20s. There's no comparison. I mean, you know, I run a mass spec laboratory. You know, I've learned mass spectrometry. I'm about to be trained on gas chromatography, triple quad mass spec coming up. And I started picking this up and I mastered the cube. And I do solves now in under a minute. And I've memorized all the these algorithms in order to do cube solves. And it's become a little bit of an obsession. I do it during breaks. And it's become a little bit annoying. But then now I'm studying AI systems, linguistic large language models, and I'm writing code and learning language models, and it's all making sense. And I have to tell you, doctor, in my 20s, that never would have been possible. I was in college. My learning was nowhere near what it is right now. So is that consistent with what you're saying, that the hippocampus can be properly cultivated to grow new cells and new learning at any age?
I have experienced in my, with friends who I've shown what they need to do. I call it the formula for a strong hippocampus, a formula against Alzheimer's and depression. And in the new book now, it's the formula against indoctrination. And this formula, I show what needs to be done. And it looks like you do everything what needs to be done. And then the world is different. I mean, if your hippocampus works, then you are curious, you're excited to learn, you wake up in the morning and you want to learn things because these nerve cells really want to make you learn things, because otherwise they wouldn't survive. They're really the correlate of human curiosity. And of course, you have a strong resilience, psychological resilience, so you are not afraid to learn new things. So everything comes together. And that's actually the big chance we have right now, because the more people understand how the hippocampus works, and my book shows how it does, the more people can do what you do, you know?
Well, let's talk about what are the key components of that. I mean, and of course, I'm a food scientist, so I can start out. I'll offer the first thing here is definitely avoid neuroinflammatory foods, right? So that I can say that.
There's the law of the minimum and the law of the maximum. The law of the maximum means certain things are necessary, but too much is not good.
And those right, things right. that... And then there's the law of MSG. The minimum. Oh, excitotoxins. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me throw this in. I'll turn it back over to you. But excitotoxins. See, for decades, I have avoided, you know, aspartame and artificial sweeteners. I also avoid seed oils such as canola oil and cottonseed oil and so on, because these oils are highly inflammatory to the cardiovascular system, but also to the neurological system at the same time. But there are so many taste enhancers in the food supply. They include yeast extract and torula yeast, and these are found in many so-called natural products as well. Even soy sauce contains glutamate. And over the years, I've noticed I have a lot of sensitivity to glutamate. And so I completely avoid those things, which means I don't have neurological inflammation. I don't get headaches or migraines. I don't have brain fog, nothing of that kind. And I sleep really, really well. I go to sleep and I sleep and I dream. And man, I wake up, the brain is ready to go. And I don't use drugs to sleep. You know what I mean? It's just all natural, wholesome sleep.
Yeah, that's a big part of my formula, is at least one portion of the formula contains sleep. And sleep is actually the time when the hippocampus, actually, I think actually we have, sleeping is let's put it the other way, without the need of the hippocampus to refresh and produce new nerve cells, there wouldn't be even a need for us to sleep.
Interesting.
Sleep is actually caused by the hippocampus to regenerate overnight.
Wow. Okay, what are the other factors that people can take advantage of?
Well, one is we are social learning machines, and every time we are together with people and look into each other's eyes or we touch somebody, oxytocin is released. And oxytocin is not only important, you know, it's at birth, it's the hormone which delivers the baby, so to speak. It is one of the major fertilizers of the hippocampus. It's the major hormone for producing new nerve cells in the brain. So it helps the mother-child relationship for a lifetime, because the mother, based on the oxytocin release, not only for the child, for the birth process, but also for the because it activates the hippocampal neurogenesis, creates a situation where the mother remembers everything in wow. detail in the first month and years. Even prolactin, you know, which is required for giving milk to the newborn, is an activator of neurogenesis. And so if we are socially active, we activate neurogenesis. That's why the unsocial distancing and the lockdowns have been so harmful to society. I already realized at that time that not besides the bad food and the bad sleep based on the horrible news you get every evening before at bedtime. And of course, the social isolation caused a severe increase already in depression and an acceleration of Alzheimer's. And that in turn tells us that neurogenesis was down already by these measures. But there are also other things we need a very central part of the formula against indoctrination in my book, is a purpose in life.
Ah, let's talk about that, because I mean that certainly is something that drives me, and it changes the whole perspective on reality. If you have no purpose, you know, life seems meaningless, and you're almost automatically depressed.
But yeah, absolutely. If you're asked, there are studies out there, many of them. If you're asked if you have a purpose in life, meaning if you wake up in the morning, do you have a reason to stand up? And if you answer, well, I have to stand up because I have to go to the toilet, but that's the only reason I have to stand up, then of course the likelihood that you get Alzheimer's is almost doubled.
Oh wow. But if you stand up and you say, I have to go out into the world today and help make the world a better place, and here's my plan for doing that, then boom, you've got all this passion and drive.
Absolutely. That's why in chapter 7 of my book, where I show that it's not nothing is lost, and actually we can become stronger actually after this war against our brain, if we realize what's going on, then one purpose in life, which I ask everybody who's watching us now, is be proactive, not just consuming this information, read the book and use this information to convince others, even if they don't want to be convinced, because step by step, people will understand that what's going on, nobody is lost, at least not most of them are lost. I truly believe that. And we have a majority behind us who can save the world from these technocratic ideas of governing our lives with artificial intelligence and who knows what.
Well, yeah, let's talk about AI here for a second. I don't know if you know this, but I'm working on an AI large language model project that we'll be releasing open source to the public. And in fact, one of the things, it's funny, I was talking with Skyhorse, your publisher, the other day about including Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book, The Wuhan Cover-Up, mm-hmm. as a training text for that language model. And Tony Lyons there at Skyhorse said, absolutely, he gave me permission, so we're going to use that book. I would offer the same question to you with your permission and with Skyhorse's permission. We'd love to include your book as a training material for the language model. But AI can be very dangerous, as you know, but it can also be an amazing tool for exploration. And so absolutely. What we want to do is put out a language model that people can query and get ideas and do research and have new thinking. But on the other side of that spectrum, the danger is that people will just get mentally lazy and they will turn to AI to write their college papers and compose their emails and do all the thinking for them. But AIs aren't thinking. They're actually not thinking. They're using statistical linguistic models to fill in word patterns. And it's not cognition, not yet. It's not the same as cognition. What are your thoughts on AI?
Yeah, not yet. But it's a dangerous technology, because even creativity can be encoded in such computer systems, because what is creativity is essentially experience, our experience, and then there's a random factor that by chance you come up with an idea based on circumstantial coincidences, something that happens to you, and suddenly you realize, like the famous apple, you know, that Newton brought up got the idea that about gravitation. If the story is true or not doesn't matter. The point is, certain accidents or situations create thoughts that are innovative, and you can actually program artificial intelligence in a way that it creates errors and then check the errors for novel creative ideas. And since they are so extremely fast, they can go through millions of such permutations or mutations or errors and come up with ideas nobody had thought of. And that's the danger. They can really outsmart us one day, and we have to be careful.
It seems to me that society is rapidly transitioning from the era of human cognition into an era of machine cognition. And we're seeing a lot of AI agents, software agents currently being released by companies like Microsoft and Amazon and so on, that will, without question, replace a lot of process-oriented white-collar jobs, which tend to require very little cognition, by the way. But they often do rely on pattern recognition. But AI systems are really good at pattern recognition. What do you think is important for people to learn from your work and your book about remaining relevant in a world that is transitioning to more and more AI process control, especially in the workplace?
I think we have to understand what humans really are. I mean, what makes us human? And actually, the last chapter has the heading, Try to Be More Human. So in a way, not only because of artificial intelligence, just generally, we have to understand where we come from. And we've lost a lot of that already in the decades before 2020, based on the fact that neurogenesis was low. Just to give you an understanding of that, in summer 2019, half a year before the corona pandemic, there was a paper published from Britain, from 20,000 people that have done an MRI on their brain, and they have identified that the hippocampus, despite its ability to grow every year by a few percent, is shrinking in the whole population.
Wow.
So by 1.4%. And so we have, once we are adults, we have not a growth rate of 2, 3, 4, 5% a year. We have a shrinkage rate of 1.4%.
And that shrinkage. That's alarming.
Absolutely. And it's probably accelerating now with the measures and with the injection program. But the point is, we lose our ability to be humans because we have to have the curiosity, we have the ability to think socially, to understand that our actions here, even if they are totally empathic, that they have consequences somewhere else in the world. And all these thoughts have to be in all humans and not just a few who think they want to rule us.
This is just, Dr. Nels, this is just extraordinary. I want to invite you back. I mean, we're almost out of time for today, but there's so much to explore here. But I think what I need to do is just listen to your book. I like to listen to audiobooks while I'm doing other things. And so I'm gonna get your audiobook. I'll give it a listen, invite you back for a more in-depth discussion if you're open to that.
I'm more than happy to do that.
Okay, that would be fantastic. In the meantime, let me just remind our audience, the book, again, is called The Indoctrinated Brain. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other booksellers. It's available now, including the audiobook version here from audible.com. And as you can tell from our discussion here today, this book will change your perception. But I think it can also help you take back control over the goals that you have for your own cognition, your own passion for living. And I love, as you said, the last chapter is about how to be more human. I've actually said the same thing. In this age of AI, the more we are human, the more we differentiate ourselves from automated systems. And the values of being human are so important. Compassion, empathy, morality, and so on. And these are difficult to codify in digital systems. Final thoughts on that or any other topic, Dr. Nels?
No, I mean, you're totally right. I mean, if you undermine the adult hippocampal neurogenesis, then you have what Kahneman in his Nobel Prize speech said, we only have system one. He called it system one thinking, but it's actually not thinking. It's just stereotype behavior. So actually, without the adult hippocampal neurogenesis, we are essentially robots. Actually, another Nobel Prize winner, Francis Crick, who discovered the DNA, called it the zombie state or the zombie modus. Right. And so we have to get out of the zombie modus. And the advantage of reading my book is that you not only become more human when you use the information in there, you also prevent depression and Alzheimer's. And that's, I think, is as important as well.
And that's a really important point, yeah. And by depression, we don't mean reaching conclusions about the sad state of the world. You know, I mean,
it's a mental state.
Yeah, right. You're talking about a mental state. But it's okay to recognize that many things in our world are messed up right now, and probably humanity could do a lot better than where we are. That doesn't equal depression, because, you know, even term depression has been really bastardized by the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely. I personally, I'm a pessimistic person. I'm a pessimistic person who never gives up hope.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's how I would describe myself, but I'm not depressed.
Right, right. Exactly. I would describe that more as a realist, because of all the insanity in the world. But it also seems like, and maybe we could talk about this next time, but hope is something that seems to be almost irrationally hardwired into the human consciousness.
Yeah, it is. But hope requires that we have the ability to think, even to think positive. And this thinking positive requires neurogenesis. And if the neurogenesis is blocked, and with simple measures, we can unblock it and revive it again. And then our life becomes more cheerful and hope comes back.
Well said. Well, you have just explained today what I call NPCs, non-player characters. You've heard that term?
Yeah, absolutely. The zombies.
the zombies, right. NPCs. Well, I use that term a lot, and that's what we encounter in the world. But I'm so glad to have met you today, to have this conversation, and to know that you know, here we are. There are many of us who are actually thinking about the world in an intelligent way, and we're trying to help influence the world in a positive way and empower people with solutions.
Yeah,
that
and
my
book delivers a diagnosis, and as an MD, I have to say, if the diagnosis is right, then the therapy will work.
Good point. All right. Fantastic. Well, this is the answer, folks. You don't need an antidepressant pill. What you need is to be more human and find purpose in your life, and then follow this book and grow more hippocampus brain cells, and your life will completely turn around. I mean, no joke.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Nels. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I hope we can have you back.
Mike, it was a pleasure for me too. Hope to be back again. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great evening there in Germany. And thank you for joining me. All right. Thank all of you for watching as well today. I hope you enjoyed this interview. I mean, wow, this is so stimulating to me intellectually, just to be able to talk with Dr. Nels. Now I have to absorb his book, and that's probably going to set off some other mental fireworks. It's what a time to be alive, huh? I don't know how anybody could be bored. I don't know how anybody could really be depressed. I don't know how anybody could sit on a couch and just watch CNN and think that that's the world. No, that's crazy. There is so much more to our reality, and we've just sort of scraped the surface here today. Much more to come. But anyway, get the book for yourself. It's called The Indoctrinated Brain, How to Successfully Fend Off the Global Attack on Your Mental Freedom. And you can find that at booksellers everywhere, including audible.com. And that's where I'm going to get it. I'll download the audiobook and start listening while I'm refueling my tractor on the ranch, something like that. All right. Thank you for watching today. Of course, Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech video platform. Feel free to use it yourself. And thank you for watching today. Take care. All right. Back in stock at the Health Ranger store, we now have our certified organic lab tested milk powder and also our coconut milk products. Again, both back in stock. I've got some on my desk. Can you show that? There we go. We've got milk powder in number 10 cans, which are really great for long-term storage. Also completely rodent-proof there. We also have milk, that is cow's milk, in the pouches. And then we have coconut milk powder as well for those of you who want that option. I use both of these. These are great long-term storable items, great barter items. They're both available at healthrangerstore.com along with hundreds of other products that we have there. Check this out. We also have our new organic super anthocyanins powder, which is great. I mean, this is a blend of 6 organic berry and vegetable powders. It's high in anthocyanins, which are the purple pigment molecules that have extraordinary properties for supporting your health. Also, of course, lab tested for glyphosate and heavy metals and more. And then if you go through the website, you'll see all these other products that we have. Freeze-dried beet juice powder, organic nascent atomic iodine that's in organic glycerin, by the way. It makes it more tasty for people. Here's our organic vanilla bean powder, like the real vanilla bean powder, not make-believe fantasy artificial vanilla flavors. And then we have this new Hydrate Elementals, which is organic coconut water with aquamin, which is a very popular mineral supplement, and this has great benefits. You can read about that and much more, collagen, peptides, and so on. All of this at healthrangerstore.com, where we do more in-house lab testing of our own products than any company in the world, any retailer, you know, any e-commerce company on the planet. We do more rigorous testing with our in-house lab, and that way we can bring you clean foods and supplements, things that we know to be clean, and almost everything certified organic as well. So check it all out, and thank you for your support at healthrangerstore.com. Take care.